the important thing is make them happy first. And that's their last experience is, oh, cool. They asked me what I want and they solved that problem immediately. And now I'm happy to give them a review. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now let's get to it. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today, but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Welcome back to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me, as always, is John Stiles, Ridge Realty. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's a wonderful day, Todd. How are you today?
I am doing excellent. And I'm hoping that we can survive here with this podcast because my internet has been acting just wild. So I'm hoping we get good audio. I apologize to any listeners if we get bad audio. I'm trying to get my internet issues solved. The internet company says everything's perfect. However, on my end, everything's not very perfect. So technology sometimes fails us. And boy, I mean, you realize how much you actually like count on technology. I've had it like crazy lately. My computer crashed on me like 3-4 weeks ago. And then now this, it's like, driving me crazy because we rely so much on technology. It's actually kind of sad, but hey, that's where we're at. So,
right. Yeah. It's become so useful to do podcasts or do emails.
Everything is done via technology. Yeah. I remember it's funny cause I'm not that old. Well, maybe depends on who you talk to, but, my kids think I am probably, but, I was in college in the early 2000s and I didn't have email. I never used a computer. I didn't have a cell phone up until I was like a senior in college. And then I thought I had one of those flip phones, you know, I thought it was a joke. I was the guy who was never on their phone ever. Like half the time I would go out of town and it would just stay in my apartment. And I would be gone for the weekend. I didn't have it. Like, and now it's quite the opposite. Yeah. So anyways, so today topic, we're going to be talking about kind of some management practices and how do we keep tenants? How do we get tenants and what are the best practices there? And for me, I'm an active investor in some of my stuff around here, but I wouldn't call it necessarily passive, but I'm rely on management companies in my properties out of state. And so there's, you know, different strategies for both, but they're kind of the same. They're one and the same as well. So the one is when we're dealing with the management company, we basically have to try to relay our ideas to that management company. And also you want to find a management company that is, you know, that already has the same ideas as you, and maybe has some even better ideas. When you're saying, hey, this is what I want to do, they say, well, yeah, we do this and that. And so I think finding that, you know, synergy between, you know, you and your management company is really important when you're dealing with how do you get tenants and how do you keep them. So, John, you were worked with the property management company for several years. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, maybe some of their best practices and maybe some things that you've learned along the way while doing that?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the main things to focus on is having a set criteria for who you would accept.
Yeah, for sure.
That really clarifies for your own self, you know, who you're looking for, and also prevents you from getting into trouble.
Yeah,
which is a huge concern, you know, when you're dealing with real estate. It's not really a matter of if you're going to come into some sort of legal issue. It's kind of when, at least if you're in this for a while, and if you're into several units, you know, it's kind of a matter of when you might be called into question on your legal practices. So if you can upfront set some standard criteria of who you would accept to become a tenant, then it's clear right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And follow it, and then of course have it in writing. What I've heard, and maybe you can speak to this as well, is this is what I do and this is what I've heard to do, is you just provide that written criteria. I just have a piece of paper that each tenant takes. I've heard other people of just having a sheet right at the property and the tenant initials it. Every tenant that goes and looks at the property just initials that. That would probably work as well, or signs it, whatever. That would probably work as well too. So something to have that. It might be okay to have it on your website. If you just have it on your website for that property link or whatever, but it needs to be in writing.
Definitely. It needs to be in writing. It needs to be communicated to the prospective tenants. And I do have them sign that document as well. It's for their own good too. They need to know what to expect. This goes to all sorts of parts of the business, but if you set expectations right from the beginning, things go a lot smoother all throughout the process.
Yep. That's good advice. You don't, like you said, eventually somebody's going to say they treated me unfairly. And if you've got it all documented that you aren't treating anybody unfairly, that's a pretty easy thing to get over. Oftentimes it's just a letter back to that person with proof that you didn't do anything wrong. And then they just go away because they know they got nothing to do. If they continue to fight it and want to go to court with it, well, then you still have that document. But oftentimes, if you just show them what you did, I'd imagine they would just walk away. And I haven't had that particular issue, but I've had other issues of security deposits where they say, "Oh, I should have got my whole security deposit back." And then we show them the list, and it's really easy. And then most of them just go away. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
Okay, yes. So site criteria on who, what else? Let's stay on the how do I get my property occupied. What else are you looking at?
Definitely get the word out to the places people are looking to rent. You know, I think several years ago, the main place people would go is Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And that's still a valid place to post your rental. But I think more people are using places like Zillow or even Facebook to find their rentals.
Yeah. So we started posting on Facebook. One thing I noticed, or we noticed on Facebook, was we got a lot of poor leads on there. We got a lot of tire kickers of, hey, we'd love to see this apartment. And you'd respond back of, yep, we can do a showing, whatever, this time. Okay, great, see you there. And nobody would show up. So I don't know how to make it better on Facebook. We didn't have very positive luck. We thought it was great because we put an ad out and we'd get 200 people would respond to it. Mm-hmm. And we'd set all these showings up, and out of 200 showings that we, set up, or it wasn't 200 showings, it was, 75 showings or whatever it was, big number, only like two people showed up. Mm-hmm. With Craigslist, our showing to show up ratio is much, much better. It's more like, for every, let's say, five appointments you make, probably two to three show up.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's got to be a better way to do it. We just didn't have very good luck on it. We need to probably try it again and just kind of maybe change how we're communicating with the people after the initial contact.
Right. There's a couple different points I would make on the showing process. After you've gotten the word out to whatever platform you want, and you've gotten the response from people that are interested, number one is doing some really good pre-screening over the phone.
Yep, for sure.
So letting people know what the criteria is, having them verbally verify that, yes, I meet that criteria.
Yeah.
And then setting up the appointment and then making sure you follow up with them before the appointment. So say, for example, it's the next day. Well, be sure to either call, text, or email, probably not email, call or text to verify that, hey, I'm on my way, or I'll see you in 2 hours, or whatever the case might be.
So, John, did you guys call, or did you make the prospect call or text?
I think in most cases, our leasing agents would call to verify.
Okay. How we do it is we make that prospect call or text to verify. Sure. And not saying that's better or worse. I don't know. It'd be interesting to do kind of an experiment to just see which one gets the better ratio of showing up. The other thing that we do is we stack our appointments. Yep. So there's no waste of time, or at least less waste of time. So if we've got, you can have a couple people show up, at least in my experience, you can have a couple people show up even at the same time. But if you stack them to where they're really close together, and basically somebody's leaving and somebody's getting there at the same time, and you're a lot more efficient with your time, or whoever's showing its time. That way, if you do have a skipped appointment, at least they're not sitting around. They didn't go there for nothing. That's the worst, is if you have five appointments and nobody shows up, now you just went there for nothing. So we try to stack them. We try to get at least 7 to 8 showings within an hour time frame. Otherwise, it's almost not worth time to go there.
Yeah. With so many different cultures in the U.S., we have a lot of different perspectives on time. And, does 2 o'clock mean 2 o'clock, or does it mean 2:15, or does it mean 1:45?
Yeah.
So, if you can take control of that on the initial phone conversation when you set the appointment and say, I'm giving you between 2 to 2:15, and that's when you can see the property. And then after that, your showing is over. So try to really set the expectation up front. And then, like you said, definitely schedule multiple showings in the same visit to the property.
Yeah.
So
what are some tips, John, on how to, we got Craigslist and Facebook and Zillow and maybe apartments.com and what are some other things that you guys maybe did to try to drive traffic?
That with our properties, which were small buildings, scattered site, That was pretty much all that was necessary.
Yeah.
We had enough demand in our market.
Very good market, right?
Yeah. So I know in some cases where a property would sit on the market for a while, we'd talk to our owners and see about different specials we could run, maybe throwing in a flat screen TV, maybe taking off half a month's rent, you know, some sort of incentive to get somebody in the door.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, if you're having a tough time to get people in the door, sometimes it's not about dropping the rent. It's about offering them kind of that carrot, like that flat screen TV, or maybe you offer them, sometimes you can just, sometimes you can even raise the rent and offer them something free like internet, or, you know, you could, depending on where you're at, what type of tenants you're at, but if you're getting younger type tenants, especially, if you can offer them a technology package, you can oftentimes charge more money. It'll more than cover your cost for that technology package. And it just drives traffic.
Yeah.
It's funny just because it's just one little thing. They love it. They think it's great. They're willing to pay more for it than they could go get that same technology package on their own, right? Mm-hmm. For cheaper. But it's already there. They don't have to hassle with it. They don't think about it, and they're excited to have it. And you're offering it versus the other places they're looking at aren't. So you've got to also think a lot about your demographic. That's probably not going to be as attractive if you're renting to older people. You know, a technology package isn't going to be as attractive. Flat screen TV, well, maybe attractive to most demographics, I guess, but maybe not quite as attractive to the younger generation who's watching a lot of stuff on, you know, their computer and their iPads and stuff like that, where, yeah, flat screen TVs are right, but I've got my iPad. I watch Netflix. I don't, you know, that type of thing. So younger generation might not like that as much. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I could care less, but.
Right. And one of the benefits of offering something like that is you could potentially get a discount if you're buying in bulk. So if you're getting broadband for an entire building, you could probably get a much better price instead of each customer buying it on their own.
Yeah. So where your tenants are paying, you know, $50 a month or whatever it is, you can charge them $50 a month and you're getting it for 35.
Right.
So it can work out really well in the end sometimes. Anything else on the on getting and driving traffic and getting tenants in?
I think that's most of it. Like I mentioned, in the market that I've been involved with, there's just so much tenant demand. We haven't had to think too hard about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so easy. It's been so easy for so long. But it's going to get difficult eventually. I mean, there's going to be that shift where it's going to be challenging, and we've got to start getting creative. I think another thing that right now is really important is getting good reviews. And especially if you're a bigger apartment and you've got an online presence, if you can drive reviews, so you got to get creative on how to get reviews, because tenants don't want to waste their time giving you a review. So give them incentives to give you a review. Give them maybe the first, you know, 50 people to give a review, get to, you know, have a fresh, you know, coat of paint on, you know, or whatever. Just something extra.
Right.
Maybe they get, I don't know, you throw them a free, a party, you know, the first 50 people, you have a VIP party. It's just something small. Anything to drive that traffic to get those reviews and good reviews. And then if you get bad reviews by any of them, allow that as an opportunity to then go to those reviews and figure out what's going on, fix them, and then ask for them to go in and re-review. I think that's important as well. The other thing I've heard people doing before is they go in and they're going to ask for reviews, but before they actually ask for those reviews online, they ask for they send, you know, basically a letter that says, hey, you know, we'd love to know what needs to be done around this apartment complex to make this a better living experience for you. And then those tenants, you know, just, and you don't have to say just that. You want to probably identify what are the two things, or what's the one thing that could be done. Because you don't want a list of 50 things and have to do 50 things. You just want a list of one or two things. What's the one thing we can do better, or we can help you with, or we can fix to make this a better living experience for you? And then when you do those, you know, that if they say, well, I got a leaky faucet, it'd be great if you guys would repair it. You might not even have known about it, but now you do. Go in and repair it right away, and then give them an opportunity to then go in and give you an online review.
Yeah.
So you've, the important thing is make them happy first, and that's their last experience is, oh, cool. They asked me what I want, and they solved that problem immediately, and now I'm happy to give them a review.
Yeah.
Now, if they ask for something that maybe you can't do, or is like they want a new pool, you know, something like that, well, you know, we got different things to talk about that. But yeah, that's definitely, I think online reviews are going to be really important to help drive traffic and get good tenants, because that's what you're looking for, right? You're looking for the best tenants that are willing to rent in the area that your apartment's in.
Yeah. You know, I think this is really a good point of what a benefit of investing in an apartment building versus a single family home. Because we, as with the management company I used to be a part of, like I've mentioned, we did scattered site management. The buildings were all over the place. We had all different types of owners with different standards of their own.
Yeah.
So it was hard to create a culture of customer service that was adhered to at the same level across all properties and with all tenants, with all managers. Okay, on the other side, if you have one building where one owner sets the standard, and then you have maybe an on-site caretaker who is really that customer service person who makes sure that things are taken care of, or whatever that role is, the community development, or,
right,
you know,
right.
And you can create that place where people like to be. You can create that maintenance department that takes good care of the concerns, responds promptly, always leaves a note, always asks for feedback. And then somebody who calls and says, how was your experience with that maintenance concern? Were you satisfied? How can we make things right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot more kind of almost a hospitality type mentality of taking care of the client.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think the more you can take care of the tenants, the better your tenant retention is. It's going to cost you a little bit more, right, to take care of your tenants, but it's going to save you a lot of, or make you a lot more money. So let's talk about tenant retention, because I wrote down just a handful of things, and then we can kind of expand on those, or maybe you have some more things that you guys did that you can add onto those. So first of all, and we will expand on these as we go. So first of all, maintenance, make sure you're taking care of maintenance. Next is communication. Make sure you're communicating with your tenant. Next would be lease renewal incentives. Make sure you have incentives and make sure you're on top of lease renewals. And then the last one I wrote is understand your tenant needs. What are your tenant needs? So the other thing that I didn't write down, but as we were talking, as you were just talking, I was thinking, you know, try to do your best to build a community in your apartment that people want to be a part of. If people are happy to come home, that's going to keep a lot more tenants, where if people are just, all they do is they get their head down, they go to their mailbox, get their mail and head down right to their apartment and shut the door and lock it. And that's it. They don't feel comfortable outside. They don't want to be outside. They don't want to do anything else or talk to anybody. That's not creating a very positive community. Now you might have a couple of those people just because there's people out there like that. But if everybody's like that, or most people are like that, it's not going to be a very good community. So you want to create a good community as well. So Let's kind of pick those apart, and then John, you can add those. So what, I mean, maintenance, obviously that's pretty obvious, right? We want to stay on top of root maintenance. It's your property becomes that slummy property really quick, and it's a snowball effect, right? I mean, you don't take care of a couple things and all of a sudden a few of the good tenants leave. Now you have less money to pay for the things that you need to take care of. And so those get worse, and then the next good tenants leave, and then just continues to snowball down. So if we can just start right from the start and take care of stuff the way it's supposed to be taken care of, and not only keep taking care of, but being very responsive, quickly responsive. That's the benefit to, you just talked about, you know, single family or small scattered sites. The benefit of having a, you know, 100 plus unit apartment complex is that we've got, or we should have, on-site staff. We should have at least for every 100 units, you should have at least one full-time person that is kind of your leasing and your basically tenant communication person. And then you should have a maintenance person, maintenance tech. And so for every 100 units, you should have at least that. And then as you go, of course, you're going to add maybe some part-time or maybe another full-time.
Yeah. I think there can be conflicting mindsets, you know, if you don't approach this right. You know, sometimes if you get a maintenance request, it can seem like a hassle. It can seem like, oh, I got to spend more money. Oh, did the tenant break this? You know, if you approach it that way, it's going to be a bad result. You're not going to want to spend the money. You're not going to want to get it fixed right. And you're not going to satisfy the tenant. The tenant's going to feel like they're being ignored. They're going to be dissatisfied. And then they're going to start saying, well, when the next thing breaks, I'm just not going to mention it to the maintenance or the management because they don't do anything anyways. So that's another snowball effect if just maintenance issues keep building up.
Yeah. I was, you know, I got my single family portfolio, 1 to 4 unit portfolio. And I was looking at selling part of my portfolio, and everybody expected my rentals to be in tenant condition. And I thought that was really, I mean, I guess I get it, but I thought that was really odd. What do you mean tenant condition? They're in great condition. Yeah. My tenants move out and we have to do a little paint touch up and stuff like that, but it's ready. It's a flip. I mean, it's ready to go to the consumer in the retail market. It's not, I didn't put in, you know, if it's an area that can support granite countertops, I put in granite countertops. I didn't put in like cheap countertops and cheap cabinets and cheap appliances just because it's going to be rental. I put in the stuff that all their neighbors have, you know, so, and oftentimes even better than the neighbors. Why would I give my tenants less than that? That's always been my mindset. And I think that needs to be the mindset going into it is you need to, you don't just think about it as tenants. I try to call my tenants residents because for me, that feels more, less like you think of tenant, like a tenant as, you know, just some tenant, you know, and as if they're my residents or they're people that live there that, you know, that have, this is their family. This is where they live. And so you have to take care of them. They're not a burden upon you. You're making you money and you better treat them right. Because otherwise they're not going to make you money. They're going to basically burn your money for you.
Yep. So. Well, Todd, if you're telling me the truth, you are unique as a landlord, I think, because I've been into many rental properties where the owner wants to sell, and man, there's a lot of things that need to be fixed.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Some of my properties have things that need to be fixed. But it's very minor stuff usually. And it's typically that tenant that's living there that has caused it. So like for instance, right now I've got a tenant that just moved out of one of my properties. I asked them to move cause I want to sell the property, and I've got a list on my phone that we made And it's going to take us a very short amount of time. We've got some landscaping that needs to be done because they didn't take care of some of that. We've got, you know, just some minor things. But it's basically going to take us a few days to get it ready to go on the market. We're going to have to paint. We are going to redo the hardwood floors because there's a lot of scratches from, you know, beds and whatnot. When they moved in, those hardwood floors were in perfect condition. You know, it's just, they're ready to go. I don't skimp just because, you know, my lowly tenants are living there. I just don't think that way, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
I don't think you can. I think people that do that are making a lot less money on their rental properties than the people that think,
yeah,
I need to take care of these people.
Yep. So. Yeah, because if you let your property get run down, you can't really raise your rents. I mean, in a good rental market where you have a good product, you can always raise your rents, because if that current tenant can't afford it, you can always re-rent it because you've got a good product.
Yep.
But if you've let your product, your property get run down, you've reached the ceiling of your rent increases, because as soon as that tenant can't afford it anymore, nobody else is going to want to live in that condition.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So that's maintenance. A little bit about communication. I think just responsiveness, you know, making sure you're communicating with the tenants, making sure they're understanding, especially if you're doing like a renovation to the whole, complex, you know, sending out that letter of, you know, we're excited to be doing this renovation. Here's what's going on. Here's, you know, maybe some rough schedules. You don't have to send them like the daily schedule, but, you know, in June, we plan on replacing, you know, windows, and in July, the landscaping will get started, and you'll start to notice that in August, we'll be painting the whole exterior, stuff like that. In the interior of the units, we're going to be doing, you know, some cabinets and countertops, blah, blah, blah. And then reassure them, you know, if you're planning on having them stay or whatever that is, reassure them that you're not just kicking them out and you're not asking them to leave or anything like that. So I think that's important if you're doing a renovation, and just overall communicating, you know, that this is, even your expectations of if you're noticing whatever, kids or even adults are kind of crowding in around in some area, you know, just sending out like a friendly reminder of, you know, this is, you know, we want everybody to feel comfortable here. Maybe people are playing loud music. Hey, you know, we don't know who's doing it right now, but your guests are coming in and playing loud music. We'd love for this to be a great environment for everybody and that kind of thing. So I think communicating like that is really beneficial. And then just communicating overall, like when your tenants are asking for something, you need to be able to talk to them about it and set expectations. And so,
I think that providing more information than the tenant needs is really good. You know, we might feel like, well, it's none of their business. We're doing what we want to do. But if the tenant's kept informed about repairs that are not even in their built in their unit, but it's affecting the community, or for example, if the roof is being replaced, and then they're not surprised when, you know, roofers show up and start banging on the roof.
Especially when it's something like that, and it's going to be like 7-8 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it is. You need to send out notices not only to the building that's going to be affected, but all the buildings that are close enough by where they're going to potentially wake up from it, of saying, hey, you know, bear with us. This will be a short period of time, but it's going to, you know, improve our community. This is what we're doing. And people respect that a lot more than waking up at 7 o'clock in the morning to pop, 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 and going, what the heck is going on? And then now they're pissed off.
Right.
Now you've got to calm people down.
Yeah.
Versus they just go, oh, yeah, that's right, I got this letter. Oh, man, I should have went to bed a little earlier yesterday, you know. So yeah, communication, you know, we've got, I mean, you've got so many ways to communicate. You've got email and obviously letters and phones and, you know, bulletin boards. So, I mean, there's just so many ways to communicate. It's just, there's no web page. There's no reason not to do it.
Yeah. And I think if you have a big enough property, that property can even have a Facebook page that puts out updates about what's going on at the property. So,
Yeah, the property I'm purchasing now, they have a Facebook page set up, and we will have a, you know, continue to have a Facebook page for that property, and then we'll be adding a Facebook page for other property that we're, you know, doing renovation to. We're probably not going to add it until we actually get some more of that done, but yeah, for sure.
And that's another way to be just attracting other people. If there's positive activity happening on that building's Facebook page, then other people can see that. Of course, you got to really monitor it, because there could just as easily be negative comments or negative feedback. Right. So you got to make sure you're on top of handling those situations.
Yep, absolutely. Lease renewals, lease renewal incentives, that one's fairly straightforward. You just want to stay on top of your tenants when their leases are coming, you know, due. You want to get on top of it, make sure you try to get them to stay. It's not the biggest, but a big cost in property management is turns, unit turns, because you've got tenants that like to move. So a lot of tenants, depending on the property and the property type, they're going to move every year or two. And if you can get them to stay an extra year, just one extra year, that's going to save you per unit. It's going to save you, let's call it between $5 to $1,000 per unit, and sometimes even more. But it's going to save you money. Overall, it's going to save you a lot of money. So if you can get just one extra year out of every tenant, you're going to make a huge difference in your bottom line.
Yep.
So
100% agreed.
Yeah. And then, understand your tenants' needs, even demographic wise. I mean, you've got, do you have a property with a lot of Hispanics? They're going to have slightly different cultures, slightly different traditions, slightly different, maybe needs or wants than if you have a building with a high, let's call it Somali population. And same thing with not even just race, I mean, or culture wise. And of course, you got to be careful with how you do things in your building. You don't want to exclude people either, but you do have to be aware of who your tenants are and understanding where, kind of what their thoughts are, what their culture is, and that. But even with, income levels or, property class, we talk about A class versus C class. Well, your C class tenants want certain things and they expect certain things, and your A class tenants want and expect certain things. But if you are trying to cater to both A class and C class, you're going to be all mixed up, and they want different things and they need different things. And so that's just how it is. And so you have to understand who are your tenants that are driving into that property and make sure you're catering to that tenant and not a different tenant than who's actually coming in.
Yeah. So, definitely can be difficult trying to balance all that.
It can be.
You don't want to, like you mentioned, you don't want to exclude somebody. And if you're having, a apartment sponsored Christmas party, is somebody going to get upset because you didn't have this other party? That's maybe something to keep in mind.
Yep.
But, one way to be helpful in that is maybe your leasing agents, if your building naturally attracts is a lot of people that speak Spanish, well, make sure that your leasing agent can speak Spanish.
Exactly.
Yep. So that they can feel comfortable with that environment.
very hard to communicate with your tenants if they can't speak the language of anybody that is kind of in charge. And so again, yeah, Hispanic, Somali, you should have somebody that can speak their language. I mean, you just having that is going to be a huge advantage over the neighbor property that doesn't have that, but they have the same tenant base, you know? So do your tenants expect a pool and you don't maintain your pool, or you're planning on getting rid of it, but your tenant base expects that? Well, that's a poor decision, you know? So you got to think about, you know, what are they going to expect? What do they want? What's important to them? If having some of the luxuries is important to your tenant base, then great, do it. Are they willing to pay for it? You know, obviously everybody would love a pool and a gym and all the bells and whistles, but it doesn't mean they're going to pay for it and doesn't mean it's a need for them. So we got to understand what their needs are too.
Yep.
So the other thing is kind of building a community. And that's one thing I heard recently on a podcast. I thought this was what a great thing to have, like a community, whatever you would call them, community liaison, somebody who builds that community. And you can do it. It's as simple as, like, you got a 100 unit apartment complex. You're not going to be 100% occupancy. And if you are, you're actually charging too little in rent. So you're going to have at least one vacancy. So it's 99% occupied still. You're doing okay, right? So could you hire somebody, maybe a couple, or, you know, that lives in your apartment. They pay the utilities for that unit. Maybe they even pay a little bit of money. Maybe they pay $100 or $200, depending on what kind of rents are in the area. And they are your community liaison. You give them a budget. They can throw certain amount of parties a year for your community. They're the ones that are out there. They're meeting people. They're connecting people. They say, hey, you know, Jim, meet John. You know, John's a real estate agent at Bridge Realty. You guys, I think, would hit it off. Jim, he's a mortgage broker at XYZ Mortgage, and you guys should connect. So that's the type of person that you want. They're going to be in charge of doing that. They're there just to build a community. They're not there to collect tenants' rents. They're not there to take tenant complaints. They're not there to, you know, do maintenance requests. None of that. They're there to build the community, and that's their job. I thought that was super powerful because, again, creating that community and that feeling of belonging, people will really kind of want to stick around in that type of environment. And that just spreads. When your property is being talked about by other people, to their friends, and their friends hear that, they're like, my apartment doesn't do, like, my apartment sucks. My apartment, nobody talks to each other there. I want to live where you live. You're going to get people that'll stay and people that'll come in. So I think that was a really cool idea. Though this guy actually has a company that does it, and you can pay their company, and they hire that person, and, you know, are in charge of the you know, that couple or whatever to do that. But you pay them, then they're a third party company. But you could just do it on your own as well, or hire that company too.
Yeah.
So I'll try to find that podcast. I can't remember which one I listened to and who it was, but I'll see if I can think back and find it. And if I do, I'll link it to the show notes so people can listen to that one too.
Yep.
Well, it's not my podcast. I didn't have this person on, but I should find it because I should have that person on.
I really like the idea. I think it's really important to have that person be somebody who lives at the property.
Yep.
Maybe that was obvious to you as well, but because if they're just naturally incentivized to want their home to be a place that they would like to live at, and then have the type of personality and mindset to create that community where they live, you know, that can go really far.
Yep.
As opposed to you maybe being offsite, or even the manager being offsite and having so many other responsibilities. It's really great to have a separate person do that and also have them live on site there.
Yeah. Well, and your on-site leasing staff should be, you know, helping build community as well. But again, they're there from whatever, 9 to 5. A lot of your tenants aren't even home from 9 to 5. They're at work. Right. So having that person that is there, they probably even have a job, at least part-time job. Maybe they run their own business, whatever they do, but they're doing something, for sure. They have a job because they still have some bills. But they're there from 5 to 10 PM. They're there on the weekends when your leasing agent is not there, and your maintenance person is not there. So they're, again, they're more eyes and ears on your building, which is great. That's what we all want. But they're building that community.
Yep.
Well, cool. John, do you got anything else you want to add to, like, how do we keep tenants around?
I think we hit most of the highlights. The communication piece, I think, is really key. Mm-hmm. Just even if you're not able to meet the tenant's expectations, to be able to explain the actual situation and reasoning, just goes a long way.
Yeah, so. For sure. All right. Well, that we'll wrap that up. I think next week, I wanted to talk about it this week, but I just decided to delay it. I think we're going to talk about some creative real estate as well. So we'll probably do that next week or the following. So awesome. Well, John, how do people get in touch with us?
Yeah, just wherever you're listening or watching to this, be sure to give us a comment, give us a review or a thumbs up, whatever it may be on your platform. We are just about everywhere. We're on YouTube, Facebook, and iTunes and all that. So we really appreciate if you would be in touch with us. We'd like to know how you like the content, what else you would like us to cover, and be sure to respond to you on that.
Awesome. Appreciate it, John. Have a great rest of the day. Make every day a Saturday.
You too.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.